I've played this game. I've coached this game.
What are you asking exactly? I'm still confused by your question.
Now, back to
Will and Divvy
on 95.7 The Game.
All right, we're definitely still on the Niner wagon, especially with Greg Cosell around the corner, but I want to take this moment.
Of clarity?
Well, thank God for Graham.
This moment of clarity.
I don't know. Like, I feel like I just want my own little side. Like, what's the opposite of fade? In the gambling world, what would be the word that's the opposite of fade?
Ride.
All right.
Tail.
Ride.
Tail, yeah.
Ride.
It's tail.
Ride the Willard. I don't like calling myself the, but anyway.
Ride the Willard.
Yeah.
When did I say that?
War,
I don't know.
Warriors.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I didn't even know you had that.
Nope.
People driving around, they're like, had what? I didn't say that. Grandy just played that. Play that again.
Ride the Willard.
Yeah, like that. You didn't just say that.
No, nor would I ever.
So I'm fading, and I want y'all to fade with me. What game was that? Was I right? I think I was right.
Oh, give me a sec. I can find out
the
date.
Well, if you're fading me, you're 17 and 16 on the year.
No.
Or 18 and 17.
No, but I don't always fade you.
Right?
You know that.
Yeah.
There have been a few where I went with you, but there was one where I was firmly like, I'll fade! There was one, I faded you more than once, but there was like, hey, audience, get on the bus, Gus.
Yeah.
Anyway,
fade the Dibber tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yep.
Good game tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Is it Cleveland and Pittsburgh?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
At Cleveland.
So it's sort of good. One good team, one not so good, but that's a fun game. Warriors tonight. Warriors tonight.
Okay.
This is a good spot for the GSW hoop. This is a real good spot. Now, you got a big number to cover.
Was it 10.5?
No, is that what you think it should be?
I'm just guessing because Atlanta's terrible.
They're not as bad as you. They've won 3 of 4.
Okay.
They've won 3 of 4 now.
All right, respect.
They're gonna go watch out now. But the Warriors are -8. They're -8 tonight.
I see it at 7.5 on ESPN, so there you go.
Hawks, yeah.
By the way, when you famously said this, Willard.
So I'm fading, and I want y'all to fade with me.
That was Thursday Night Football last week when Dibs was right and you were wrong.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, no.
You wanted the Commanders and the Eagles got it done.
Yeah, I forgot. That's right. That was you got me that night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough. Tough on you. The pick is in for tomorrow, but I'll say this honestly about Sunday, Packers and Niners. I've gone back and forth.
No, you haven't.
I have.
No, you don't. No,
eight
you
times
don't.
Today.
No, you told me 2 days ago. You told me yesterday the pick was done.
Well,
you said it was an easy one.
It's getting
harder.
Are you
flippy floppy that much?
You just laid out all those metrics about where they are per drive, and they're amazing. And then I listened to
number.
Kyle Shanahan today, and Kyle Shanahan talking about how a couple of games and stuff, and we'd be 7-3 and stuff, and people would be
two.
Well, he didn't even go there. And people would be thinking differently. And I look at all those metrics and DVOA, defense adjusted value over average. Every play is measured against situation, who you face, and all the rest of it. They're still -6. They're very, very good. And so I'm wavering.
By the way, you know who's worse than the Niners in the red zone?
There's 5 teams.
Wow.
Green Bay is one of them, I believe, right?
There you go.
There you go.
The Green Bay Packers. By the way, the number, some Niner money has come in.
Okay.
It is back down to 2. Back down to 1.5.
Yep.
And it was 2.5. Now back down to 2. At least where I throw...
some shackles.
When I throw peanut butter cups around.
Green Bay in fourth quarter points allowed.
Yes.
#1.
Meaning good or bad?
They've only allowed 3.2.
Oh, damn.
They're the best fourth quarter defense in points per quarter in the fourth quarter football.
That's good, because the Niners don't like to come from behind anyway.
Right.
So just have a lead and then ride that sucker.
And they're exactly the same in fourth quarter points. They each average about 6 per game, and
okay.
I do want to make sure the defense gets the shined flashlight upon them for how bad they've been in the fourth quarter defensively.
This is the big old fancy Fox game, right?
Yep.
So this is a late game out there.
Yeah, 4:25 there, 1:25 here.
Meaning like, is Green Bay 3 or 2 hours ahead?
Oh, you're right. It's 2.
Anyway, but
I think you're right.
By the time we get to the fourth quarter, you're talking night game. Night game in the very cold Green Bay frozen tundra, Lambeau Field.
Yep, the tundra should be a little thawed, but your point is well taken, and I just hope there's no wetness, because then all the Brockistans, oh, you know, he's really not bad throwing the wet ball. So I just hope it's a dry ball for Brocky Poo.
Oh, I hope so. Gosh, I love it when you call him Brocky Poo.
aimed at you, mainly.
Well, I know it is. Greg Cosell is going to be along here in just a handful of minutes. What do you make of this? Because we all, listen, we wanted to ask Steve this yesterday, and we did, and it sort of was building on that emotionally exhausted idea that Evan Giddings kind of started that conversation yesterday. So I asked Steve, like, hey, all those deep postseason runs, how does that affect you? And I was asking it within the framework of the 49ers, which he's not a 49er expert, but anyway, here's what Steve said.
I want to be clear that I'm not talking about the Niners because I don't know,
sure,
you know, what the vibe is in the building. But I can say from experience that, you know, you have a run like this that lasts, you know, 6-7 years. It is exhausting. There's no question. And, you're climbing the mountaintop and, you know, trying to get there year after year. And you get there and you got to start all over again. And it's not easy. This stuff, you know, this stuff is so competitive. Everybody's gearing for you, man. It's tough. So we've been there and we understand, that kind of emotional wear and tear for sure.
So A, what do you think about that? And B, along the lines of the semantics argument that you and I were in yesterday, is that a reason or is it an excuse?
I think it's a reason more than it's an excuse, but if you say it out loud, it becomes an excuse.
Hmm.
And I think about Kansas City and why they haven't fallen victim to that. And Evan's argument was, if you win, you don't have the same emotional negative energy around the effort it took you to get as far as you went.
I agree with that.
I kind of agree with it, yeah. And that's an interesting way to look at it. And I would, though, look at an adult and a pro athlete and say, you need to be more resilient than that from February failure to August camp. But Kansas City, 4 playoff games last year, 3 the year before, 3 the year before, 3 the year before, 3 the year before. And so they've gone Super Bowl, Conference Championship, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. So they've been deep and they've lost the game and it hasn't really affected them. So that's where I pause when I think of it as a reason. It feels more like an excuse.
Well, okay. So, and again, my definition, when we were asking this yesterday, the difference between a reason and an excuse is who's using it.
Yeah.
Right? Like to me... Yeah. And I hear that word a lot. It's a buzzword for a lot of people.
Excuses. Yep.
Well, hold on. Do you feel like the Niners are making excuses? Because to me, that's the only way that it can be an excuse. You and I are not capable of using an excuse for the 49ers because we're not the Niners.
Right.
I didn't do anything wrong on Sunday. You didn't do anything wrong on Sunday. We sat down and we watched. So, like, it's only an excuse if Kyle Shanahan were to be like, so, we're a few plays away from 8-2. And we would be if Christian wasn't hurt. That's an excuse. Or,
agreed,
we would be 8-2, but boy, are we tired. Boy, those games.
Yeah, the emotional.
Ago,
yeah, the emotional
really
toll.
Beating. Oh, the holdouts. My God. Right? So I don't hear Kyle doing that. I think a lot of people think he is. I don't know why. I hear that all the time. Kyle is either making excuses or he won't take accountability.
That's the one. He won't take accountability.
What does that mean?
What fans want is for him to go up there and say things like Steve Kerr says.
Like, when, I suck?
No, that's too strong.
I messed up?
What does Steve Kerr do when he forgets to play Moses Moody in a game? He says, you know what? That's on me. I forgot. Steve does things that make the fans feel better because he will take accountability in that way.
I'll grant you that Steve has, by the way, I don't think it's often. I don't think Steve has a lot of press conferences where he's like, I messed that up. But I do hear that. There was the famous one where Moses Moody just totally got forgotten. And it was the first word out of his mouth when he started the show with us the next day.
Exactly.
Like, I really messed that up.
I think fans want more of that from Kyle. It doesn't feel like he ever does it. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to come out and say, well, you know, I really kind of messed up that time management or I should have this or I should have that. That's what I think fans would want. But
I hear you. He does sound like he's like, no, that's exactly what you want to do in that situation. It just didn't work out.
Right.
Or what have you. I get that. But I also think I do hear at times, maybe not as much as people want, I do hear things like, well, it starts with me. Like, I you do hear that.
Yep.
I don't know if you hear him go to the press conference and be like, that play call was totally the wrong call. Boy, am I a dunderhead. Like, I don't hear that.
No, I do think fans want that because of the perception of Kyle being smartest guy in the room.
But don't you think that Steve is actually, I'd look at it from the other angle, which is that Steve's kind of special on that front.
Oh, super special.
I don't really hear a lot of coaches. Here's an example. I think most of us have the opinion that Dan Campbell fumbled away the NFC Championship game last year. I've never heard Dan be like, my bad.
Yeah.
I never heard that. I heard him go, no, that's what we want to do around these parts.
Steve is special. He's special, but having four rings makes it easier for you to be pretty honest like that. You know, who's coming for Kerr, you know, immediately after that?
Probably not many. We're sponsored by the San Francisco International Airport. Glad you're with us. You ready?
Let's go. I'm so ready. I got notes. I wrote down questions. I got questions written down.
Wow.
We got things to talk about. Mr. Cosell.
You feel confident?
No, I'm terrified.
Okay, perfect.
As always.
So the executive producer of NFL Films, who really watches the tape, and then Dibs, who has a TV, will square off in a mano-a-mano battle, and then I'll be there too, just, you know, trying to mess stuff up. That's all coming up next on Willard and Dibs.
Ride the Willard.
Ride the Willard.
I thought you guys were going to suck, but you guys are great.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Okay, we've reached that time. I mean, we've let him in on the conversation now. He knows how nervous you get when this happens.
Yeah, I had a tummy ache yesterday, and now it's even worse.
My God. If anybody had any idea what Dibs goes through on the buildup toward the executive producer of NFL Films, Greg Cosell, you guys would have no idea. It would blow you away.
Let's just get to it because the hype is only making me more nervous.
Well, that's what I'm going for. But he's joining us on the River Islands guest line. Hi, Greg. How are you today?
Gentlemen, what's happening?
We are doing great. We are doing better than the football team we talk about. That's for sure. I tell you what, we got a lot of stuff. Now, we've been talking. We've kind of been doing a Greg Cosellist type of a show so far the first hour and a half.
I don't know what that means. I'll have to share.
I'll tell you. Like, it's a lot of DVOA and this ranking and that ranking.
I don't do that. I watch the tape. I don't know what all those numbers mean.
Well, that's where you find that stuff is on the tape, Greg. That's where it is. It's all tucked in there like a cake. You know what I mean? It's in there. So here's one that we talked about yesterday, and I would love to get your reaction to whether this is circumstantial or if something was actually happening. In the first eight games of the year, Brock Purdy attempted 29 throws of 20 yards or more, 3.6 per game in the first eight games. The last 2 weeks, Greg, he has not attempted one. What are you seeing? Are you seeing defenses take that away? The receivers? What are you seeing with regard to downfield throws in recent weeks?
Yeah, I think in this game in particular, last week, he did not see the field very well. There were throws to be made that he left on the field that were downfield throws. And I can't tell you why that he's not seeing it, but he has not been as decisive. There were specific plays that I made note of as I watched the tape where the route concept was there, the read was clean, and for whatever reason, he just didn't process it the right way, and he ended up not throwing balls that he should throw. So he did not play very well this week, and the number you just gave this past week was predominantly on him. He just did not see it the way he needed to see it.
What sort of a pocket are you seeing him on film have? Because I'm watching Greg, and you know, I watch it two and three times, and I'm seeing a quarterback who doesn't have a lot of a comfort zone back there.
No, but a lot of that is also on him because, you know, he's also leaving clean pockets a little bit too often. See, one of the things, and we talked about this earlier in the season, and one of the things that really stood out about his last year was two things really stood out. Number one, his ability to throw with unbelievable timing and anticipation. And that's one reason there were more downfield throws. And number two, his ability to recognize coverage rotation instantaneously and know exactly where to go with the football. Those two things are not happening with the same level of decisiveness and consistency as they happened a year ago. Certainly not in recent weeks. He's had a stretch here probably for a month or so where he just, to me, watching tape, has not been particularly comfortable. He's leaving the pocket too early. He's not seeing it with the clarity that we expect him to based on what he had done in his past. So he just doesn't look like a comfortable player right now.
So this is interesting because there's actually a clip of Kyle Shanahan just today. And I get it. He's the guy's coach. But he says that there's no difference between the way Brock Purdy is performing last year versus this year. Would you agree with that based on what you're seeing on tape?
Well, first of all, I'd be truly, truly surprised if Kyle truly meant that. You know, he's giving a press conference.
Right.
So he knows. He knows. Believe me, he knows. But first of all, he's doing the right thing. You don't throw your quarterback under the bus and say he's playing poorly. You don't say that. So that doesn't mean anything to me, and it shouldn't mean anything to you guys.
No, so I guess...
So the tape tells you what you need to know.
And you would describe that as what?
Just what I said.
Like Brock Purdy is not playing anywhere near as well this year. Is that kind of what...
I mean, I'll give you an example. On their first third quarter possession, okay, he threw to McCaffrey for 6 yards on 3rd and 15. It was just outside the red zone, so they ended up kicking a field goal. I don't know if you remember the specific play.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that was a great example of Purdy just not seeing the game with the same innate, refined, nuanced feel of timing and anticipation that we've come to expect. He had two throws there. He had a seam route to Samuel, and he had Jennings on the high-low with McCaffrey that he would have made last season without even thinking. So instead, he threw a check down to McCaffrey for 6 yards, and he threw it too quick. It was a clean pocket. He just got rid of it quick. And then they kick a field goal instead of perhaps getting a touchdown. There was another case, and see, some of these occur when there's completions, so you don't think of them as, oh, maybe he didn't see it the right way, because some of them are completions, but there were too many dropbacks in this game in which, to me, and I've been watching the Niners, you know, for years and years and years, as you guys know, in which I do not believe, and again, you know, I'm not talking to Kyle, obviously, but where I believe he just did not process the route concept versus the coverage in the way that he needed to and with the necessary clarity.
And I'm actually fascinated by the play before the one you referenced, 2nd and 19, where Purdy scrambles for 4 and he had McCaffrey open. So to me, that's another incident of him being a little tentative. And I wanted to ask you about the throw 2nd and 11 that Debo was open on play action. And if they convert that, they probably move the chains and keep the ball. What did you see from the film as far as Brock and that throw?
You're talking about the one late in the game?
Right, right. The one he airmailed Debo by about 4 yards.
There's nothing to say there other than he threw it inaccurately. I mean, that was the play. If he put it between the numbers, it's a completion. He just airmailed it. I mean, that one is not a function of not seeing it. Or that was the play, and he threw it to the right guy, and he just airmailed it. I mean, I can't, you know, those things happen. You don't want it to happen there, but it happened. That was just a bad throw.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us every single week on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Greg, let's talk Debo Samuel for a bit. The fan base has really been frustrated on the plays that they've come accustomed to see really work, and this year they're not as much. Do you see that as a schematic thing? Has Debo maybe lost a step? What do you see with his game?
Well, I think when your quarterback's not playing at the same level, your receivers end up not getting the same number of targets. And because when fans watch a game, they can't see the route. So they automatically assume, because he's not getting the ball, that the receivers are not playing as well. And that's not really the case. Most of the time when a passing game is not working, it's more on the quarterback. But I will say that Seattle played, I think, I would guess, I don't know this for a fact, I would guess they played more man coverage than the 49ers might have anticipated going into the game based on what they'd seen on tape from the Seahawks prior. And I thought at times all the receivers struggled to separate and create, you know, cleaner throws. But when it's man, you still have to deliver the football. You know, it's just the way it is, because otherwise you're not going to make any throws. But I don't think that that Deebo Samuel's a problem. I think that the pass game as a whole, which starts with Purdy, has been a little bit of an issue.
What are you seeing from the jet sweeps? Not only this game where Deebo had two, one of them called back because of a penalty. I'm seeing ineffectiveness now. Is that because of just the overall execution of the play, or have defenses caught on to some of the stuff that Kyle likes to do?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because, you know, when I watch these plays and I see guys get beat on blocks, I don't think that that means that the defense has caught on. I think it means that guys don't make their blocks. I don't think the O-line played particularly well in this game. I thought there were a number of poor snaps by the center, by the left guard Banks. Again, I'm just watching the tape, so that's all I can tell you. You know, I'm just wondering if Father Time has caught up to Trent Williams a little bit. I don't know if he's playing at the same consistent elite level that has defined his career. And he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, as he should be. But I spoke with someone else, you know, from the league who watches a ton of tape, and kind of agreed that it just might be the beginning of Father Time catching up with him.
Okay, that's interesting. I think we'd love to hear more about that. Like, what?
There's nothing more to say.
But what do you see? Yeah. What do you see that sort of has you thinking that?
Well, I think in pass pro, he's not been quite as powerful with his anchor. There are a couple times he just gets not beat. You know, not where you go, oh my God, he's just getting beat, but where he's just getting pushed back a little bit too much into the pocket, which never, you know, would happen. I think even in the run game, there's been a couple of times where, you know, he just didn't quite make the block with, you know, kind of the definition that we've come to expect. Just little things. Like I said, it's not like you watch him and go, oh my God, this guy can't play. It's just, you know, little things that start to show. And, you know, is he 35? Is that how old he is?
I think he's even older.
Yeah, it might be 36.
Older,
yeah.
Older than that. Yeah. Here, I'll look it up.
You know, eventually it happens. I mean, you know, and again, I'm not going to sit here and say that it has happened. I'm just wondering, you know, this is not a definitive statement. I'm not saying it as a mathematical equation. I just notice on tape that, you know, you used to watch the Niners. It's this way with the Eagles, with Lane Johnson. Like with Lane Johnson, when you watch the Eagles and he's their right tackle, you watch tape and it's just like, you know, you never even notice Lane Johnson. That was the way it was with Trent Williams. It was like, oh my God, whoever he's blocking is just irrelevant. It's just, that's the way it is. But now it's just a little bit here and there.
Trent turned 36 in July.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the ways that shows up, Greg, is when he lines up in an illegal formation, maybe because he knows he's a step slow and he's starting to maybe cheat on it. I won't ask you to comment on that because you can't judge his mindset, of course, but I just was fascinated by that penalty from a veteran who knows how to line up. I want to ask you about the touchdown to Juwan Jennings. They go play action, and I want to say it was... You go ahead,
Greg. I was just going to say, I did think it was interesting that with Kittle out, that they played 12 snaps with six O-linemen, and they played Jalen Moore. To be honest, I didn't expect that. So, when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's interesting.
And how did that work for him? Because I also was kind of interested. They had two other tight ends up, and they only were special teamers, and so they opted for a third tackle instead. What did you see on the film from those?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember any, you know, major plays, In other words, it didn't seem like it was a big factor, watching the tape, but they obviously thought that was the best way to go. And those are the kinds of things, guys, just so you know, I don't comment on that in terms of whether it's good or bad, because they go through a whole week of preparation. We're not in the meetings. We're not in the process of their preparation. So clearly, this is what they thought was best. And, you know, I think when you have a coaching staff and a head coach that's been in a number of championship games and two Super Bowls, you got to kind of accept the fact that maybe they know a little more than you and I.
Greg, I'm wondering this. The data suggests that the Niners are still moving the ball pretty well until they get to the 20-yard line, and then things are really jamming up when it comes to the red zone, and they were so good at it last year. What are you seeing with the Niners inside the 20?
Yeah, well, that's where we hope that McCaffrey becomes a factor, because obviously that's where he was a big factor a year ago, and that changes the way defenses play. So that's what we're hoping, you know, as he continues to get his kind of feet wet and, you know, gains, you know, a little more just for the feel of the games. Because I don't think he looks badly. I just think it's a matter of, you know, getting acclimated to playing, you know, an NFL game. So that's what the hope is, because, you know, teams that can run the ball, particularly in the low red zone, you know, that really helps. That's how you score touchdowns, because the passing game is hard. The passing game becomes schematic. Like the touchdown at Jennings, which you mentioned,
right.
That's a schematic play, and it worked really, really well, but you have to run a lot of schematic stuff because there's just not a lot of space.
And it's part of that scheme in that moment, having Christian McCaffrey out there, so the play action becomes much more of a viable threat.
Well, it can. I mean, you know, but you know, it depends on what your play call is. Like on that Jennings touchdown, Jennings was in a wing alignment, and he showed blocking. And they were playing man-to-man, Seattle, and Love, who, by the way, had a really good game. They played a ton of what we call big nickel with three safeties. I almost felt like in this game, Mike McDonald deployed Love in the way he deployed Kyle Hamilton with the Ravens. They're not exactly the same player, obviously, but I thought that there was an element of that to the way in which he deployed Love playing with their three safety personnel. But so Jennings blocked. So Love put his eyes in the backfield thinking it was a run play. And then, you know, Purdy did the play action boot left, and Jennings just leaked out, and Love was stuck inside. So that's a schemed play from 3 yards out. You know, who knows? Maybe because it's second and goal. You know, a year ago, they probably hand that off to McCaffrey.
Greg Cosell with us, Willard and Dibbs, NFL Films. Greg, have you noticed, and this is kind of like reflective of the fan base, I think, right now, we've had this entire conversation solely about the Niners offense. Let's go to the defensive side of the football, and this probably won't surprise you. I know that, you know, we've talked about Nick Bosa a lot, but when he left the game, the number suddenly got way, way better for Seattle, and there is the thought that he might miss this coming game. So what are your thoughts on the 49ers on film and how that pass rush looks without Nick Bosa?
Well, I think I've told you guys over our conversations that it's not so much the number of sacks, it's how offenses treat guys who are big-time pass rushers. And it was evident that the Seahawks were not going to let Bosa wreck their pass game with one-on-one matchups versus either right tackle, Lucas or Gerald, whoever was playing, because they deployed multiple concepts to limit his edge rush throughout the game. That was clearly their game plan. So when he went out, things changed dramatically. You know, again, I'm not making a judgment here. People can if they want. This team does not blitz. They only had 1 5-man pressure in the entire game, okay? And that came late on the final touchdown drive by the Seahawks. Every other pass rush was a 4-man pressure. And that's the way they've essentially been all year. They have the lowest blitz rate of any team in the league. So that's the way they've chosen to play. Now, one can sit here and debate, you know, oh, well, they need to do a little more blitzing. You know, you can debate that. And maybe they'll do that, particularly if Bosa is out. We'll see. But that's the way they have played pretty much all season. And when he went out, clearly things changed.
When you look at the secondary and their performance, I was trying to watch the tape and just see if there was ever a snap where they were coming up and playing press. What do you see from these corners, Greg? Because I see a team that likes to play 6 or 7 yards off almost all the time.
Yeah, that's kind of the way they play. They're not a heavy press man team. I don't know. Again, that could change too, because as we've discussed, Renardo Green, when he, you know, he's the rookie who plays now at left corner. It'll be interesting when Ward comes back what they do. But anyway, the point is that Green in 2 years at Florida State was a heavy press man corner, because that's the way Florida State played. They were a heavy press man defense. So that's Green's background and his experience. So they play that every once in a while, but that's not really foundationally how they play with their corners.
What would you say is the challenge with that group going against Jordan Love? Incredibly talented, in and out of the lineup with injuries this year. Has a lot of turnovers, a lot of interceptions in just 8 games. Like, what have you seen from him on film this year that will challenge the Niner defense?
Well, they're pretty complete offense because they run the ball really well. Josh Jacobs is a really good back. He's got a physical presence to him. He's got short area burst. He's just a really good back. And the run game is pretty much their starting point. Love is incredibly gifted. He's probably, in terms of pure physical gifts, top five in the league. But he can be a little reckless. He can be a little undisciplined. But he's very aggressive. That's his mindset, and that's the way it plays out. So he's going to turn it loose. So you have to be aware of that. He's not a check down guy. And when I say that, I don't mean he never checks it down, but I mean he's going to turn it loose. You know, he's not risk averse. Let's put it that way. So, you know, he will push the ball down the field and they will call plays to do that. He's got a big arm. Like I said, he's really gifted and he's big. He's 6'4", 220. So you're dealing with a very, very physically and athletically gifted player who's very aggressive in the way he sees the game.
How do they go about inflicting damage in the pass game from what you've seen on film? They have a lot of different weapons. Do they play mostly 11 personnel with the three wide receivers? How do they go about it, Greg?
They'll play a good amount of 12, but Jaden Reed is the most interesting guy because they are a heavy motion team in many ways, like the Niners, and Jaden Reed is their predominant motion player. So they do a lot of things with multiple motions with him. And by the way, when you go in motion, it's not just the pass game. A lot of times when you go in motion with someone crossing the formation, maybe returning, is you're trying to move second level defenders, and what that does is it impacts run support. So you have to have a plan for all that going in. Are you going to react to it? Are you just going to let it happen? You know, you have to have a plan. That's part of an overall structure of a defense. But the point I'm making is it's not just in the pass game in which they deploy motion with Reed. And Reed will end up lining up all over. So you have to be aware of where he is. He will be offset in the backfield a number of times in the game.
Greg, I want to go back to your comment about the Niners in the red zone and hoping that Christian McCaffrey's presence will now get that going. There's something interesting that we found. Maybe you'll debunk this as just coincidental. But the Dolphins with McDaniel, the Rams with McVay, the Niners with Shanahan, and the Packers with LaFleur, all disciples, right, running similar systems. They're all in the bottom third in the league in red zone efficiency right now. Is that, in your mind, coincidental, or is there something that the league is really, like, you know, like catching up to?
I would say that you'd have to look at a much larger sample size because all those guys have been coaching for a long time. So, you know, that's a hard question to answer because you'd have to go back and look. You know, McVay's been a head coach for a long time. LaFleur's been a head coach in Green Bay for a long time. If this is the first time it's happening, you know, I can't give you an answer, but if it's the first time it's happening, my sense would be that it's probably more coincidental, but I don't know that. So, but you'd have to do a much larger sample size than this year.
Got it.
Yeah, perhaps it's personnel-based, too, when you don't
it
have
could be.
McCaffrey
yeah.
for a long time, and then you miss Kittle, you're going to probably be a little worse in the red zone.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and don't forget, the Rams were without Kupp and Nacua
for
most of the season. So, yeah, I mean, I can just see over these last number of years when Kupp was healthy how many times he caught red zone touchdowns within 10 yards.
And the Dolphins have been without their quarterback a lot, and the Packers
have been
without their quarterback
the
a lot.
In a sense, you've answered your own question.
Well, thank you for helping us do that, Greg. Hey, as always, great stuff. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, I love talking with you guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
okay.
Greg.
Hey, Greg Cosell, NFL Films. That was fun.
Super fun. And he likes talking to us because he learns a little bit.
Well, I think
from the Dibber.
I think he likes talking to us because there's a comfortability where he knows that halfway through your question he can interrupt.
Well, yeah. He's the guest. Right? Yeah. And he's on, and for, not to go too inside baseball, but he's on a direct line. So as a caller, you're kind of easily talked over, but when somebody comes in with a clean line like that, it's a 50-50 battle.
Yeah, he's not on a phone.
No,
he's on a gizmo.
Yeah, and the gizmo makes it easier to interrupt the host.
That's right. Well, and so do your questions.
Well, you got served right off the jump.
What are you talking about?
You got straight up served. Grand, you'll play it back, I'm sure.
I won that.
You're not involved. You took a stray.
But I won.
You opened up the interview by catching a stray.
No, not even a little bit. Like, if you want to ignore the follow-up where I said, no, this is what we're asking for. And he's like, oh, yeah, then I'll answer that.
You had to follow up because you got served.
Not even a little bit. You got interrupted.
It's fine.
You lost.
I knew. I made so many coaching points.
Cosell or Dibs?
He went back to my question because it was so impressive about Juwan.
Let's go to a neutral observer.
Because he's neutral.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark with us.
Hey, don't I might have just sided with you, Dibs.
See, bias comes in.
I think Cosell gave it a little more aggressively to Willard today.
Well, but that's not the question. Nobody, I told you, I'm just here to mess stuff
up. You're 0-2.
I'm not in the game. I can't lose a game that I'm not playing. I'm just sitting here.
I think Dibs was fine today.
Yeah. Fine.
I'll take five. From Grandy? I was outstinking standing.
Fine means you lost by 30.
It wasn't as good as 2 weeks ago, but it was nowhere near as bad as the week before.
Grandy's grades, wow. I feel like it's a B minus.
Okay.
I'm feeling a B plus.
That's definitely
couldn't let me get away with a B.
All right, we're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full service banking with no compromises. Guess what's coming up next, kids and campers? Debo Samuel letting it loose on his podcast with regard to the frustration of this season. We'll let you hear that. We'll talk it out. 888-957-9570, the theme of the day. Are we overreacting? Are the Niners actually kind of circumstantially 5-5? Your thoughts welcome on Willard and Dibs.
On 2nd and 5, clean pocket, tipped in the air. Hankins, 12-year veteran, has that one fall down into his hands and brings a big smile to a guy who's done just about everything in his time in the NFL. How about a pick of Purdy?
Now, back to
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
All right, we're going to play the Debo stuff here in just a little bit. And we got some Warrior stuff, too, as we get a little bit later on in the show. And the Hawks are in town tonight. And the Warriors are favored by 8, and I love them. I love them in this spot tonight.
Game 3 of 4 for a Atlanta Hawk road trip.
Yep.
They've been out for a little bit now.
I think the Warriors, you know, after the performance, they're just going to come in. They're home. It's off a loss. They're going to be buttoned up. I think they're going to play hard. I think this is a good spot for them tonight. I look forward to checking this one out. Of course, you'll hear it right here on 95.7 The Game. And so we hope you'll join us throughout the evening for Warriors basketball. But if you're just joining us, the takeaway for me from Greg Cosell and NFL Films, and we're going to have like some of the commentary for you so you can hear exactly what he said. This is a gross summary of the conversation, but essentially, Brock Purdy's not playing well. And again, that's not somebody who's got an opinion that wants to do a hot take or whatever. Greg is a math brain. He looks at the film and he tells you what he sees. And when Kyle Shanahan said this earlier today, comparing Purdy last year to this year,
it's hard to make a lot of progress after the way he played last year. And it was hard to make a lot of progress after the way he played his 7 games in his first year. So I think Brock's playing at the exact same level. I think there's different circumstances around him. You know, our team hasn't been quite as good through this, but it's been close to getting there. Close isn't, doesn't matter. You know, that's why we're 5-5, but a couple plays here and there. And I think we're looking at it totally differently. And that's why we put ourselves in the hole. And that's why we made it a lot harder for ourselves here at this back half. But I still think it's going to come down to the same stuff. I bet these next 7 games come down to the fourth quarter, and we either get it done or we don't, and we got to find a way to get it done.
Greg, after sharing with him that Kyle said that, almost laughed, and he goes, look, he's hosting a press conference.
Of course.
Not going to throw his QB under the bus, but Kyle knows that's not true.
Kyle sees it, and when you watch it, and you know it, and you see it, well, then you know it. And yeah, Kyle's not going to go out there and say, well, you know, there's a 2nd down and 19 play, or 3rd and 15, and man, Brock, there's 2 guys open. It was the route concept, and I'm actually going to punch up the all-22 in a minute just so I can try to understand what Greg was seeing, because he checks it down to McCaffrey, and it's 6, and that means it's going to be a field goal.
Sets up a field goal.
Right, and just what he said about not every, you know, complete pass is necessarily a great play or the right read, if I'm paraphrasing.
Well, he also said there are, like, the whole conversation the first 2 days about separation. Nobody's open. He said there's throws downfield that are there, and he's just not seeing them. Or is his shoulder hurt, and so he doesn't feel confident in letting it rip? Or is he overthinking this whole thing? Expectations, looming contract.
Yeah.
Like, we can get into all of this, and maybe we open it up to everybody. 888-957-9570. This is an extension, if you will. Steiny and Goo kind of talked about this at the beginning of this week, late last week as well. Like, how do you see Purdy now versus what we saw the first 2 years? Do you see it kind of straight across the board? Is there a dip? Are the circumstances making it completely different? It's funny because at the beginning of the year, the two differences that we saw from Purdy were, A, he was running more, and B, he was pushing the ball downfield even more than he was before. And we also are acknowledging that this year he's played without a lot of his weapons a lot of the time, right, which he hasn't had to do before. So bake those all into the cake, if you will. But all of a sudden, the last 2 weeks, he's not pushing the ball downfield at all. And
yeah, zero times, that, throws over 20.
That concerns me because yesterday I was like, well, McCaffrey's back. This feels like a security blanket, and he's kind of captain check down in the whole thing. But I wonder if this shoulder injury, I wonder if this didn't just happen in the game the other day. I wonder if this is something that's been dogging him for a little while.
Yeah, only he would know, and he won't let us know, because then we get back to our whole discussion about excuses versus reasons, and you can interpret that however you want. And if you're out there playing for me, you've got to be able to do all the things, and if not, well, you're hurting your team. And if you can do 99 out of 100, yeah, it's passable, but if you physically can't throw a deep pass, then you're hurting the team. And I don't know if that's the case, but I do see a team without George Kittle who can get 20 yards down the field, and Ayuk's been gone a long time. And outside of that, Juwan Jennings, less of a deep threat, I think.
Sure, sure.
And Debo, I'd love to look at every snap or every route that he's run the past 2 or 3 weeks, because I don't see him getting open very often down the field, and, you know, let alone 20 yards down.
But Debo has never been the precise route runner. We know this about Debo.
Right.
I'm gonna dig my feet in on Debo Samuel. I said this earlier this week. I'm going to say it again. I do not believe that Debo has lost a step. I am going to reject this narrative that we are now jumping onto suddenly here in week 12 of the 2024 season that Debo's getting old and got old. I don't see that. I don't see it at all, because when Debo does get into the open field, he gone just like he used to be. He was in Seattle. He got on the other side of the defense, gone. They didn't catch him from behind. I think Debo is absolutely, and look, he's dealt with some injuries this year just like he always does, but I think Debo is fine. I think that there are circumstances around Debo. We call Brock Purdy a product of the system. Well, they all are to a degree if you want to go that way. Debo Samuel, I still think, is fine. But if the offensive line is not playing well, and I don't think they are, the Trent Williams conversation was interesting too.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think the offensive line is playing as well. That's going to make it harder on your jet sweeps. And if Brock is not seeing it downfield, that's going to make it harder on Debo Samuel.
No doubt. And you know, listen to Greg Cosell, and he talked about the pocket. And I asked him about, you know, what's the state of the pocket. And he says it's not that bad. He's leaving too soon. And part of that, I think, is he's gotten really good at and being comfortable with running the ball. So he's had so many plays this year where he's left the pocket and made a play with his legs. And so I do think that when you leave the pocket, you limit your ability to then see it and make a deeper throw down the field.
Yeah, I mean, this is all, to me, really, really interesting. So 888-957-9570. In your opinion, has Purdy dipped? We can get into that. Now, we promised the Debo sound first. Greg Cosell, if you're just joining us, the executive producer of NFL Films, with what he sees on tape with Brock and Trent and portions of the 49er attack that are not playing as well this year. We'll play that for you here real soon around the bend. But we want to get to this as well. Cleats and Convos from Bleacher Report. This is Debo Samuel's podcast, and he was asked if this is the most frustrating season that he's ever been a part of.
This year, for sure. Me personally, me being, want to be one of the you know, kind of be want to be my best self as much as possible, especially as a whole, as a group, kind of hit on it, like losing games that, you know, we don't supposed to lose. And we put ourselves in positions, like put our back against the wall at times. And just look at from top to bottom, like one of the best rosters in the league. It's just like, it gets frustrating because, like, we know we're capable of. We got to finish games. You know, we got to be the Niners that everybody knows that, you know, we are. And it kind of get frustrating at times when you don't win those games. And
right.
You kind of be like, yo, like, why we keep putting ourselves in these positions and, like, putting our back against the wall? And now every game that we play, it's just like, you got to treat it like your last. Even though you treat every game like that, but it's really like, yo, if we don't win this game, then, you know, we'll be in some trouble.
Yeah, you're in trouble if you don't win this game. Right. I kind of feel like you're in trouble if you didn't win the last game.
Well, and I wonder how much of that mentality can actually motivate a player where, yeah, you know, this is a really big game, we got to go out there and get it. You got to go out there and do it for four quarters so we can all say it out loud and think it. And I do wonder about the psychology of being an underdog for the first time in 30 weeks.
I love that.
I hope that, you know, somebody's walking around the locker room and slapping up a -2 on everyone's locker, or 1.5 or wherever it is.
Plus two.
Thank you. Yeah, I did it backwards.
First plus sign in 30 games.
Just pass out flyers. Yeah, you guys are dogs. You're a dog. Play like a dog. That's partly what's been missing too in fourth quarters, like them closing out games. I'm not seeing it. I did want to share this with you.
Yeah, go.
When Bosa got hurt, after that, Seattle went 30 plays, 186 yards. There was one negative play, which was a sack by Floyd. They went 72 yards touchdown, 34 yards field goal, 80 yards touchdown.
6 yards per play.
6.1 after Bosa went out.
They were 1.8 before he left.
Right. And 1.8. Just, and one negative play. And it happened to be a sack. And so I do think about this Sunday really through that lens from a defensive standpoint. Totally. It might be that simple.
No, I mean, like, you're going to have to shed the vanilla if you're Nick Sorensen.
That's a t-shirt.
The vanilla is totally based on Nick Bosa. Whether you agree with it or not, that vanilla is based on Nick Bosa. The idea that we could just rush four, we don't need to blitz anyone. Even if Nick doesn't get there, they're going to have to dedicate two or three people to him and other guys will break through. That's what the vanilla is based on.
This is one of your best takes.
Okay. If Nick's not there, you got to drop the vanilla. You got to drop that vanilla.
Yeah. Marble fudge was an early favorite of mine.
Then do it.
You got the chocolate swirl in there and then the vanilla. Might have been something else.
You're one of those people that when they go, when they got the soft serve and the vanilla's on the left and the chocolate's on the right, and do you like go to both and,
you gotta
mix,
eat
and
it.
Then mix them up?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're one of those people, huh?
You're like, you do it like hemisphere. You go vanilla side.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That's a little...
It's all messy down there. It's all blended together. Sometimes they got the thing in the middle where it's already mixed for you.
Yeah.
That's better.
Yeah, much.
Anyway, you're listening
to that. Call the swirl.
95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app. Twitch and YouTube. Powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal Financing at the dealer.